Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
St. Xavier University is for students who want more out of their future. We pride ourselves on preparing graduates with the skills they need to succeed in life. Visit xxu.edu to start plotting your path to a brighter tomorrow. St. Xavier University, the best in you.
Welcome to the Under Center podcast presented by St. Xavier University. Shout out to Eric Strobel about to get on me right there from our first podcast. I got Strobel, sorry. It's Xavier, Davis, it's Xavier. I apologize. Of course, it's Wednesday's show, so we have our Bears insider, Adam Hogue. Eric Strobel is here, our Bears contributor. I am Kenneth Davis. Today, what a day. I was looking forward to you today, Hogue, when I was getting texts about what was taking place at Hallis Hall. Somebody hit me up, and I was like, I know the same stuff that you know. So earlier on today, there was an article from former Sun-Times Tribe, but now writes for The Patch, Mark Conkle. He had an article where he basically said, and I'm paraphrasing, that Matt Nagy was going to be released after Thursday's Thanksgiving's game, all right, tomorrow after this podcast, and that this would be his last game. Now, he's a pretty found and a scribe that most people view as being reputable, so this isn't just someone throwing some mess up against the wall. But when you first heard that, Hogue, what were your thoughts, and what do you know now, since now it's almost 5:30, about the validity of that article?
Yeah, I mean, first takeaway was that it had to be something taken seriously because of the reporter involved, and he's a former Pulitzer Prize reporter. I know it's a little weird coming from The Patch, patch.com. It's different that, you know, it wasn't a report coming from some random guy on Reddit. Okay, like it was something that needed to be addressed. And I actually got put in a position because I had a previously scheduled radio appearance with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score that was scheduled, just so happened to be like 3-4 minutes right after this thing hit, which had me scrambling for information. And the first thing that, my first takeaway from the messages I tried to get answers to was just silence, right? So it was like, okay, wait a minute, you know, there's silence here. And then you know Chris Tabor's talking, and at that point, a little over an hour, Matt Nagy due to talk about 2 hours from that point. And it was just kind of like, how is this all going to unfold at Hallis Day? But I had a feeling it was going to be a wild day. The report specifically stated that Nagy had already been told that Thursday against the Lions will be his last game as Bears head coach. And it specifically said that he was told this on Monday, which right away, you know, it's kind of a red flag for a number of reasons. One is that obviously we all know that the Bears have never fired a coach midseason. That doesn't necessarily mean that a report like this isn't true on the surface, because they could easily change that. And maybe they will if they lose to the Lions on Thursday. But the idea that they would tell him Monday that Thursday would be his last, I could buy the idea of the decision having already been made after the Ravens game because of how ugly that was, and knowing as an organization you are going to go in that direction and saying, hey, the smart thing to do here is to wait till Friday because it's a short week and there's a game Thursday. Disrupting this on Monday makes no sense. So that makes sense. Telling him about your intentions, though, on Monday seems a little bit odd. And again, that's just where things were a little weird and hard to digest. And then it was more so what was said at Hallis Hall the rest of the day. I mean, Matt Nagy came out and denied it very, very strongly. He said it's not accurate, said he hadn't even talked to George McCaskey, Ted Phillips, Ryan Pace this week, and that was normal because it was a short week. And all that stuff is believable. So as it stands right now, to answer your question, my understanding, based on the reporting I've been able to do today, is that I do not believe that that conversation happened. I am not necessarily sold that the Bears haven't made that this, like, that hasn't been denied. And Nagy was asked multiple times, you know, have you been assured you were going to coach the rest of the season? And he did not answer that multiple times. He just said, I'm focused on the Lions. So I don't want to dismiss the idea completely that the Bears have maybe already decided the direction they're going in. I do not believe that they told Matt Nagy that on Monday.
And that was also the thing that stuck out to me, was the fact that he would willingly be a lame duck for 4 days, 5 days. Like, if you're yeah. fired, like, you're out. Like, if it's me, I'm out. Like, sorry, like, you don't want me, then that's fine. We'll go our separate ways and you'll figure out your short week preparation on your own and do your thing.
No football after show, E? No football after show, you're just out?
I said if I was a coach. Okay. I had one last chance to be with those fine gentlemen of the football after show, I might take it.
All right.
But, you know what I will say to that, Strobes, is, you know, I could see the McCaskies, the way they operate, of like offering him the opportunity to coach out the rest of the season. And maybe his response, and at this point, this is just
it's conjecture.
Yeah. Conjecture. I feel pretty confident in saying this after getting to know the guy over the last 4 years. Matt Nagy is a good guy. Okay. Sure. And I genuinely do believe he cares about his players, cares about this team, cares about this organization. It's just unfortunate that it really hasn't worked in many ways because of what I just said. I mean, I think that you can hire a lot of bad guys in football, and I don't think they did that. I think they hired a good one. It just hasn't worked out. And so I could see Matt Nagy, if that was on the table, saying, I'm not going to finish out the whole season, but I'll tell you what, it's a short week. You got a game on Thursday. I'll at least coach till Thursday. And then, you know, that'll give Chris Tabor a long weekend to turn the page and flip to an interim coach. Again, it doesn't sound like that's what's happening, but I'm just saying that was the one thing as this was unfolding, I could kind of try to justify if there was truth to the report. But nonetheless, it doesn't appear that was the case.
Yeah, sure. In a vacuum, having that mini bye post Thursday game would be the time to do this if you were going to do it again in a vacuum, because you have a little extra time to make the changeover, get the interim settled, etc. I think the one thing we probably should mention is that the rules for interviewing coaches have changed now. And Hoag, you can probably correct me on the specifics, but I believe teams who have a vacant position or have an open position can interview other teams, assistants, coordinators, etc. The last 2 weeks of the regular season. Is that correct? Whereas before it was after the regular season had ended.
Yeah. I'm going to be completely honest with you on this one. You're putting me on the spot and I am not aware of those rules changing.
I'll look it up while you guys.
So, I mean, it's possible. Yeah. I'm just saying I haven't gotten that far down the road yet. So if that's the case,
I will get clarity. Yeah. Stand by.
And again, to add a little bit more conjecture to this, just listen to the radio. I was listening to Parkins and Spiegel, and Hub was on there, and I believe it doesn't have to be vacant. That was one of the points that Hub was making. Of course, it would be in bad taste if you look for someone else's job while you still have that person in that seat. But it technically, Eric, I don't think it has to be vacant. But yes, the last two games, playoff teams, you can now go and interview their coaches for week 17 and 18. I believe that's as much as I know. So far.
Yeah, here's the change, so to speak. In the upcoming hiring cycle, a change: teams are allowed to interview a candidate for a head coach position during the final 2 weeks of the regular season with the consent of the other club. Like, so the coordinator's team that he is coaching for currently, they have to say yes. But if they say yes, they can do it now to the last 2 weeks of the regular season. The interview can be virtual. So that's a change, because previously it had to be after the regular season.
Is that to prevent distractions during the playoffs?
I was just thinking that.
I know there's a push in the league to actually ban any of this until the whole season's over, including the playoffs. Like, that's been something that's been brought up and quickly shot down. That's not, you know, it's not something the league wants to do, because I think they probably enjoy the, you know,
chatter.
It keeps everything interesting in January between the teams that fire their coaches, you know, and the hot playoffs
stove going. Exactly.
Right. Yeah. I've do a little bit more digging on that. I haven't gotten that far. That's very intriguing. And honestly, I'm a little confused on why they would do that, but hey, you know what so if that's true, then that is possibly one reason to move on. Regardless though, of the timing, like the timing of this should I feel very strongly in this. Whatever the Bears do, it should be with Justin Fields' best interest in mind. And it really should be that simple. So if they feel like, look, we got to go in a new direction because Matt Nagy hasn't won enough games, but they don't, but they feel like he's doing okay with the development of the quarterback and it would actually do more harm over these final, because it's only six games now because he's not going to play Thursday. It would do more harm to get rid of Matt Nagy, then I would probably let him finish out the season. But if they don't feel like that matters because Bill Lazor's still there, because John DeFilippo, especially the quarterback's coach, is still there, then I think that they can justify moving on. I just think that they got to make sure whatever they do here, it doesn't disrupt the development of the quarterback. And so, honestly, if they, it's also possible if they feel like it would help them,
mm-hmm.
then they should accelerate the timeline. I don't know how they feel. I'm just bringing up the different scenarios in what I, the conversations I would at least hope they're having at Hallis Hall.
I mean, Hogue, maybe, and again, this is just me just thinking out loud, maybe him having his hand in the pot when it comes to Justin Fields, they feel like it'd be better if his hand was no longer in the pot, going along with what you're saying about the Fippo and with Lazor. Maybe it's just better to get him, to clear him out, get him out. One thing I want to go back to, and I'm not saying that you're saying it, that Tabor would definitely be the interim. I'm just asking because a lot of time during this year, and when people talk about dismissing Matt Nagy as far as being the head coach, people always brought up the fact that Mike Pettine is on the staff and him already having the history of being a head coach. Is there a reason, or do you know, Hogue, if it's going to be Tabor, if Nagy was let go? Is that because Tabor was the guy when Nagy had COVID, or is it a situation where it's up in the air and maybe Mike Pettine would have a chance to take over if Nagy is released before the season's end?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't 100% know what they would do. I think Tabor makes the most sense because that was already the plan in place that they executed when Nagy missed a game, and there's reasons for that. I mean, I think people who threw out Mike Pettine's name when that happened a few weeks ago are missing a number of things. One, Mike Pettine does not have a big role on this staff. Like, he just doesn't. He's an analyst. He's in charge of special projects that they give him to scout different teams and come up with schemes that they should know about. He helps both sides of the ball. And, you know, he is a senior defensive assistant, I think his title is. But, you know, it's not like he's been in there commanding the room, leading team meetings, things like that. Chris Tabor talks every single week in these special teams meetings, which is a huge part of the roster, which is why it makes so much sense that he takes over as the interim coach and the acting head coach when Nagy missed a game. He has also been here for 4 years, so he knows the organization. He knows the players. He's also involved as a special teams coordinator, of always being involved in situational football within the game, because that's part of being a special teams coordinator. You have to be aware of which one of your units is up next based on down and distance, what's happening on the field at all times. So it just makes too much sense, to me at least, that you just hand things over to him rather than a guy who, just because he was the Cleveland Browns coach for a while and didn't really have that much success. Like, I don't, plus honestly, I we know what Mike Pettine is as a head coach. Wouldn't you rather see Chris Tabor? I thought did a decent job the 1 week.
From a special teams coach to another, I would look out about Carmel's head coach. I would watch my back. I just want to add that.
I think that makes all the sense in the world. We saw Tabor do it. Like, sure, it makes all the sense in the world. Like I said, one name I would be interested to see if he got the shot would be DeFilippo, who had a huge cycle interviewing for head coaches when Nagy was hired here.
You know,
obviously didn't catch on, but like that would just be intriguing to me to see him get, you know, a six game or whatever, however many games sample, just to see how he'd run things.
Yeah, you know, and I'll never forget, I talked to Flip. It's actually the first time I'd ever met him at the Super Bowl when he was the Eagles quarterbacks coach, and he interviewed for the Bears. So this was shortly after the Bears just hired Nagy, and he was it was media night at the Super Bowl because they were playing the Patriots that year. And you know, he felt very, very strongly that he, you know, had a real chance to get the job. You know, he felt like the interview went well. And I think that's a big reason why he was brought here a couple years later when they had an opening on their staff. Because I think Ryan Pace felt really good about Flip too. You know, so he's an interesting candidate because, and I think we're all talking about interim basis, probably certainly not like permanently going forward, but you know, from what I could tell, I think he's done a really good job with Justin Fields this year. I don't think there's really anything to criticize.
That's kind of why I bring it up. You're talking about doing things in the best interest of Fields. Who better to know exactly what he needs or what he can and can't do than the guy who's been hands-on every week with that kid?
So the problem, though, is you're all of a sudden you're leapfrogging Laser in the hierarchy, and you're all of a sudden you're saying, oh, now this guy, like, Laser's now outranks Flip, and then all of a sudden you're going to change that. And the reason why I bring that up is because specifically when it comes to play calling, game planning, things like that, it's just, to me, that's a little awkward. I do think it kind of more big picture with Flip, I find him to be an intriguing head coaching candidate down the road somewhere. You know, he had two not so great stints as a coordinator, but some guys are just meant to be head coaches, not necessarily call plays. And that's okay. And I've always felt like Flip's been impressive as a coach and relating with people. And maybe he's just not the best play caller. I don't know. I wasn't in Minnesota or Jacksonville when those situations went down, but obviously it didn't go great in either spot for various different reasons.
Hogue, an organization is not going to come out and address every issue of every report, and they shouldn't, right? But what does it say, the fact that this was the most trending thing in Chicago media today, and the Bears said nothing as far as it's not true, and like they didn't address it whatsoever? What does that kind of say as far as perhaps what Matt Nagy's future will be, if it says anything, in your opinion?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot today, because on one hand, if you come out and you say, you know, this report's inaccurate, Matt Nagy's still our head coach, and then you end up firing him Friday, which I'm not saying is going to happen. I'm not expecting it to happen, but I think it's still something that could be on the table. I don't know. Does it seem like you misled people on Tuesday? That gets into the semantics and the nuances of what the report said. I think it would have been okay to come out today and say Matt Nagy has not been informed of his firing. That's just not true. And it would have put Chris Tabor in a little bit of better situation, because Tabes had to talk first, 45 minutes, actually 50 minutes before Matt Nagy was scheduled to talk. And I just felt like that was a little awkward position to put him in, to have to address things first. And so they had a couple different options. One of them would be to do that, you know, just put out a statement. And, you know, multiple reporters, including myself, reached out to the team, and there was not, you know, that did not happen. They could have flipped things to have Nagy talk first. I think from a PR perspective, maybe they're thinking that that makes a bigger story or adds credibility to the, or, you know, I'm not sure, but then at least you don't have your special teams coordinator, who's kind of the man in waiting, if you were making this move, having to adjust or having to address the situation. I will say this, Tabor handled it really well, I thought. Actually, I think everybody who talked today.
I was going to say, I thought really Nagy came off fairly well today. And he does not always do that in press conferences. I thought he handled himself with grace, and he handled himself well today.
I agree. And even the people kind of criticizing him for not answering the question about whether or not he's been given assurances about his job, listen to him. He answered the question. He's not, and I guess he could say no, but, you know, his answer of not really answering the question, just being worried about Detroit, is an answer to the question. So that's kind of getting picky. I think for the most part, Nagy handled himself very, very well, including on the topic of, you know, the fire Nagy chant that happened at his son's football game too. You know, I thought that that came off as extremely classy in the way he answered that too. And so a lot of people were put in a tough position today. And I'll also say this, like, I've been part of bizarre days at Hallis Hall, many of them self-inflicted by the team. Like, the Bears didn't create this report today. You know, it's not like this was something that happened internally, like the Aaron Cromer, like somebody within the organization screwed something up or did something wrong, and then they had to address it in a weird press conference. Like, those are weird days I've had at Hallis Hall. Today, if they made any mistake at all, I think it's just that they could have been more aggressive in putting out the flames earlier in the day than they were. But I also think that the way everyone came out and handled it, including Nagy, they did a good job. The larger picture, though, that the fact that nobody higher than Matt Nagy has talked in so long, I think has put him in a tough spot a little bit. And I'm not saying anybody needs to have sympathy for him, but Ken, you were even texting today, like with us.
I felt bad for him. I'm not, like, text hit me with the Twitter, come with your heat. I felt bad. Everything you said, Adam, was on point. One, he handled that so classy with the Kerry Grove kids, how he didn't step into that. And when you tweeted it out the other day, I retweeted it. But your point of the Bears didn't do this is accurate. So we can't necessarily just, because our first reaction is always, those damn Bears. Basically, that's always our first reaction. They didn't cause this situation, unless we find out who in Hallis Hall was leaking it to Congo. But they didn't cause this situation. But when Nagy came out and had to sit there, and you just hit it on the head, Hulk, when he didn't say, yeah, they told me I'm here for the rest of the year, he basically let us know, yeah, they didn't tell me nothing, so my ass can be out of here. And for him to do that, and it's one of those reasons that I feel like us people who apologize for Nagy as far as we don't hate him, which people just want you to hate someone so bad. He's just always, to me, and I'm so far away from Nagy compared to you, Hogue, but he's always seemed like he was a decent dude that I would have a beer with. Like, he just came off like that. Like, he has been inept at times when it comes to running this offense.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right. But another thing that I definitely want to get to, Hogue, and I know that you'll have a much better finger on this as far as what's going on compared to us, even though you're not allowed in the locker rooms like you were prior to the pandemic, was the Jordan Schultz of the podcast, the co-hoster of the Playoff Pod with Bears receiver Allen Robinson. He also, for anybody who doesn't know, hosts the pod with CJ McCollum of the Trailblazers. But Schultz tweeted out yesterday, and I'm paraphrasing, that last season Matt Nagy had lost some players in the locker room, and that basically after last week or this game that took place on Sunday, that he lost the remainder of the team or the majority of the team that was still left. What were your thoughts on that, on that tweet? And as far as if Matt Nagy, to anything that you've heard, has lost parts or majority of the locker room home?
Well, first let me talk about Allen Robinson addressing this today. So, I'll give Chris Emma from The Score props for being the one that asked the question after a little bit. Because I'll be honest, I was sitting there and I was trying to figure out how to phrase the question and knew it had to be asked. And Emma went ahead and asked it and did a good job with it. And Alan was ready to talk about this. Okay, like he was ready. He was ready for it. He wanted to get his message across that he can defend himself. I think he said, I'm a grown-ass man. I can, you know, if I want a message out there, I can put it out there myself. I talk to you guys every single week here. And he's right about that. He's absolutely right. And he's handled himself with class, openly talked about his contract situation, the franchise tag and all that. So, I thought another example of somebody today in front of the microphone handling things well. I thought, here's the one thing that people might not realize kind of inside the job that also stood out to me about that. Typically players who are not practicing or are injured do not talk. And it's a Bears policy too. Like, we'll request guys. And if they show up on it's even come up sometimes where they're like, such and such is going to talk after practice. This is more in training camp when players talk after practice. And then they get hurt that day, and then they don't talk. You might not hear from them for weeks if it's a significant injury. Like, guys who do not practice do not talk to the media. So it was interesting to me when, now they didn't really have a real practice today. They had a walkthrough, but they put out the injury report, and Allen Robinson was still the DNP. And DNP is all you need to qualify somebody not talking to the media. So the fact that he still came out there and talked to the media, again, is another indication to me that he wanted to talk to the media today. He wanted to address this, and he wanted to defend himself and make sure people know that he's not the one that was telling Jordan Schultz, his podcast partner, you know, the stuff from inside the locker room. Where it came from, I don't know. I've been doing this long enough, though, guys, to know that you are never going to have a full locker room of 53 active members, whatever the practice squad numbers are anymore. I can't, you know, it seems like there's 30 practice squad guys. They're coming in and out every day. I don't even know. The point being that whatever the topic is, whether it's how they feel about the coaching, whether it's how they feel about the president of the United States, whether it's COVID, you know, you name the topic and they're not, it's not going to be unanimous. It's not going to be unanimous. There's always going to be people upset about stuff. Now, the question is the number of players in that locker room frustrated, not happy with the coaching? Is that number growing? Man, you've seen how these games have gone. It's common sense. Of course it is. Like, I don't know that. We're not allowed in the locker room anymore. I haven't had players specifically tell me that. It's just common sense. Nobody's happy with a 5-game losing streak. And yes, there's doubts creeping in. But I do think that it matters at the same time that you have Deshaun Gibson, who I was just writing about. See if I can pull up the quote exactly. Coach Nagy is my coach. And you know I'm going to play for him. I think everybody in the locker room loves playing for Nagy. Pretty strong endorsement.
And that's something that he's kind of, and folks in the media have hung their hats on for him, is that that's one of his strengths, right? He keeps the team together. They've had, unfortunately, hopefully it's a problem of his own creation, but each of the last three seasons, they've had a 4-game or more losing streak. And the team has stuck together for the most part through all that. And last year they endured the 6-game losing streak and rebounded to make the playoffs, whatever you want to say about the 7th extra playoff spot, whatever, they made the playoffs. I think it's just kind of wearing on everybody, though. I think it's a weariness almost at this point, definitely amongst fans and the media, because it's Groundhog Day. But I gotta believe it's a similar feeling to an extent in that locker room. It's a lot of losing lately. I don't know. Well, I just feel like it's kind of an accumulation, not any one event that is like, oh, we've turned against our guy. Like, it's just been a lot to kind of, I feel, over the last 2 years, two seasons in particular, to kind of, it's just been a little bit of a growing situation, perhaps. And again, total conjecture on my part. You have way more of a pulse on this than either of us would, Adam.
What's different this week is, and I've said this many times, going back to last year when we started having these tough conversations about what was going to happen at the end of the season, the one thing I continually defended Nagy on is that regardless of the offensive issues, the play calling issues, the quarterback issues, he never lost the locker room, you know, and they did dig out of that losing streak last year. And they did finish the season 3-3, right? In their last three games. You know, so that doesn't necessarily mean you can't still make a coaching change, but that was the one thing that, like, this had not turned into a circus. This is the first week it's starting to feel like it's falling apart. Okay, the cracks, and I've hinted a couple times in some of the things I've written, hey, is this a crack in the foundation? Is this a sign that things are starting to go wrong? I have a feeling that maybe when the dust settles, we might hear some things down the line about how they weren't happy that Andy Dalton started the season, things like that. I think that some of that stuff's real, and it just feels like Sunday's game, that crack turned into a somewhat of a building collapse, right? Like it's starting to come down. Stuff like today, whether the Bears caused it or not, somebody caused it. This, you know, Mark Conkle didn't make this up. Somewhere somebody made something up that's at a minimum just drama. It's created drama, right? And the Bears had to deal with it today. And this is the kind of stuff that happens when it starts to fall apart. So I have to say the feeling has changed this week. It does feel like something I don't know that they're going to be able to dig out of.
Well, and Hoga, our last episode, we had Tony on with Alex, Ken, and myself, and we were talking about modern day Bears eras. Like, what's the most, which one's the one you hate the most? Which one was the most disappointing, et cetera, et cetera. And I went to bat for Trestman because it turned into a circus. Like, that was an absolute circus by the end of that. You brought up the Cromer thing and the crazy Brandon Marshall press conference that year and Phil Emery saying goodbye with song lyrics at the end of that season. Like, that was just bizarre. And I think you made a great point. This is the first day where it's like, ooh, we're kind of approaching that level. We're not there yet because that was just a different planet. But it's a different feel now. This definitely has the feel, the texture of things fall apart. That book we all read in middle school, right?
You know, this is kind of a different spin on what you just said, but it had my mind thinking really quick. Like, what are the most disappointing eras of this team? And you know, I think probably some of our older listeners would probably point to the fact that they never won another Super Bowl after 85. I mean, that's got to be painful. But at the end of the day, you did get that one Super Bowl, at least. You know, I think most of the 90s was just bad.
Alex brought up Jaron, and you come down from the 13-3 2001 sure. season.
You know, not winning the Super Bowl when you were in it against Peyton Manning and the Colts. You know, there's a lot to choose from. Obviously, losing to the Packers when you let them in the playoffs and then they go on to win the Super Bowl. This franchise. And the more you talk about it, it just sucks.
the problem is there's so much to choose from.
It's brutal. The Mark Trestman era, you have the week 17 blown coverage.
That was the high point. That was the high point year, and it ended in the biggest gut punch possible.
I have to say, though, this has got to be towards the top of the list. And I'm talking more so like this four-year stretch. You have so much success in 18 and so much excitement. And I know he always had his doubters, but you're feeling pretty good about Mitch Trubisky. And you make the trade for Khalil Mack. So you're going in 19 with so much optimism. And there really was way more reason to feel great about the Bears. Obviously, I took it a little too far with my 13-3 Super Bowl prediction that I'll never live down. But I think what people always forget with that was they make fun of me, and I'll take it. Pretty much everyone had them in the playoffs that year, winning yes. the division. I wasn't the only one to say they were going to win the Super Bowl. A lot of people had them getting in the Super Bowl, losing, whatever. You know, it's been just a struggle since then, and it's been so disappointing that I think the fact that if you look at this, the Mitch Trubisky pick was a failure, and the era that you had wide open when you traded for Khalil Mack, and I wrote about this last week, it's closed. It's just closed. It has. And now you have all this cap money that's holding you back, and at least you have Justin Fields, but I'd put this four-year stretch up among them. Yeah,
I took this year. I took this stretch, Adam. Said this because of the first season, the 12 wins and where it ended and the fact that it's still technically going on. We knew Trestman was out after the second 50 burner. We knew it was surprising. We heard it on the radio. It was like, he's out. Don't worry about it. He's gone. So we were relieved while we're still kind of going through this. But real quick before you get out of here, and I'm sure you've heard about this, but since you're in the press box, you didn't hear about it Sunday when it was going on. Of course, you know, Tony Romo was calling the game, former Eastern Illinois alum. And he points out that there's just a ton of talent on that offense, and that perhaps Ryan Pace was the guy that told him that. What are your thoughts on, is there going to be, and it looks like there is, the separation between Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, and Ryan Pace will get, depending on how you look at it, his second or third time to pick a head coach?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. That's a tough situation. I don't, when I rewatch the games, I don't have the announcers on, so I don't know what he said. I saw some of that stuff coming out on Twitter that he was really excited about the offense and the changes. Hey, man, that first drive was cool. They were running some cool stuff. They had some nice plays in there. And then they had the 3rd-and-5 toss sweep. So it was like, hey, welcome back to reality. I think it's quite a leap to conclude that because Tony Romo said what he said in the broadcast, that all of a sudden there's a division between the GM and head coach. I don't know that to be the case. And I think that that's actually part of why, what makes the situation so interesting, because I'm not fully convinced that Ryan Pace, even if he does have the power at this point to fire the head coach, would do that. And so does that come from above? Who's making that decision? Does he even have that power anymore? I mean, these are real questions we don't know, which gets back to what you mentioned earlier. The fact that George and Ted have not spoken since January. The GM hasn't spoken since the beginning of the season. That doesn't seem fair to the fans, man. Everybody's looking for answers. You're the owners of this franchise. Stop putting it all on Matt Nagy to answer these questions every single day. You know, whether you want to look at it like that, like help him out because he's being put in a tough spot. I also look at it like just respect your fan base more. You know, they want to hear something either way, and to not have the leaders of your franchise speak since January and the GM since I guess I don't remember the exact date talk, but it was right before the season started. I just that's not a normal way a franchise operates, and I'm sure they'll come back and say, oh, well, this is what this team does, and this is what this, I don't know. I see John Lynch quotes like every week. And
well, we do see Ryan Pace quotes every week, but it's from the pregame show on the team flagship radio station, and that's that.
True. What did he say the other day? He's seen legitimate growth.
I honestly didn't see that one. I was busy prepping the after show, so I did not see that one. It's always Sunday morning. That's all we get. And it's, you know, it is what it is. It's to me, the GM is way more indefensible than the owners. Owners, fine. If you want to stay away from football, fine, whatever. But the GM not being, I'm not saying talk every week to the media, but how about once or twice during the season and not just bookending it?
Yeah, this is a more of an NFL issue. I strongly believe the NFL should make general managers talk during the team's bye week. At a minimum, I think that should be a minimum requirement.
That's a fair compromise.
I've argued that for years, not only on podcasts, but directly to the league and in our PFWA conversations. And, you know, at the end of the day, these media policies, these interview policies, as we're learning very quickly with COVID, you know, it's not a democracy. The NFL can do whatever the hell they want. These NFL teams can do whatever the hell they want. And if the NFL backs them, then it doesn't matter what we think. And that's fine. I mean, I know there's a lot of people listening to the media complain about this stuff and say, well, why should you ever be let in the locker room? Well, fine if you feel that way. But when we get in a situation where now it's been almost 2 years since I have been in the Bears locker room, there's... Man, what percentage of this roster do I not even know?
Right.
Okay. Like literally don't know. It took us until training camp of this year to see Jalen Johnson face to face or Cole Kmet face to face. They'd already been on the team for a year. And you can blame the pandemic and obviously that's all part of it. But my point is over time, we are not going to know these players. And so when we get in situations like this and fans want to know, well, what kind of credibility does this Jordan Schultz report have? Is this real? I'm not saying we still can't find ways to get the thoughts from the players. That is still our jobs. We will continue to try as hard as we can to do that, but they're making it harder, which I'm sure the response right now is that's what they want. So great. But this is what your fans get.
Just so everyone knows, before the pandemic, how often were you in the locker room so the people can see just the vast difference? Because I don't even think they realize, some people realize that.
Yeah, every day with media availability, with the exception of Mondays. But basically Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the normal work week, you had 45 minutes of media availability. Oh, and Tuesdays too, we actually got to go in. Yeah, I mean, so it's basically every day. And then the biggest one to me is always like I can almost live with the situation that we have during the week with these press conferences. It kind of sucks because on any given day, we don't know who's talking. And it's just like, it's kind of become like, who's coming out of door number one? Who's coming out of door number two? And we don't know, which makes it hard to prepare the questions and topics that we want to address. Whereas we used to just be able to walk in the locker room and be like, I know I want to talk to this guy today. And then you have some days where like, oh, that player's getting treatment. You don't get them. You get them the next day. That stuff would happen every once in a while. But the one that kills me, and I know a lot of us all feel this way, is post-game. So just a perfect example, what happened on that blown coverage late in the game? you used to be able to walk in the Bears locker room after a game and go right to Kendall Vildor, let him address it. And most times players will do it. They'll be like, that's my bad. I got to be better. They handle it like professionals. We handle it like professionals. Fans know what's going on. And instead, it's just like, that, you know, the head coach is like, I don't know. I got to watch the tape. His teammates aren't going to throw him under the bus, just like they wouldn't throw him under the bus in the locker room days either. But at least you could go to the player and find out what happened and get the answers. And now you can't do that. And, you know, sucks.
Who wins Thursday?
I've been kind of going back and forth on this. I think I'm actually going to go to the Bears winning. I do feel like if you're the Lions, you smell blood in the water right now and you're trying desperately to get your first win. And they've had so many close games that this might be a situation where, you know, you're really feeling like you can get it done. But I've learned that in situations like this, it's better to pick the team that has the better quarterback. As much as we want to criticize so many things about the Bears quarterback, they have a pretty good backup right now in Andy Dalton. And you feel better about Andy Dalton or
Jared Goff.
Yeah, but isn't Goff not even going to play? Isn't it
Campbell said he might. He said he might. He said it's like he went all Yogi Berra, which is kind of nuts when you haven't won a game. But he said 60% chance that he's 50-50 on Thursday.
What's that line from Anchorman? 70% of the time it works every time.
So, I mean, I think you could argue the Bears would probably rather face Jared Goff the way he played against them earlier this season.
I don't know, man. You know what? I'll say that I actually, you know what? If Goff plays, I feel like the Lions might win this one.
Interesting.
Mainly because I just don't have a lot of faith in that defense right now. You know, you go back and you watch the Ravens game, you watch the tape. You know, there were some missed opportunities there. Lamar Jackson would have killed them on. I mean, there were drops. There was throws that were just a little bit off. Like that fullback screen they ran at one point. I think they ran a screen to Andrews at one point who was wide open, or maybe that was just a short little flat route, but he was open and the pass was just a little bit too far. And that would have been 10, 15 yards. You know, there was just little stuff like that that led to punts that Jared Goff is good enough to take advantage of that. And like when you hear Sean Desai talk today about like helping Kendall Vildor with rotations, maybe who's in that rotation? You know, you just put Duke Shelley on IR for the year. So that means Marquis Christian's playing slot. Hey, I know one thing, all the blown coverages the Bears have had, Marquis Christian's blown coverage to snap ratio is not good. Like, because I know they're blaming Kendall Vildor, but he was also on the field, and Desai made it very clear today it wasn't just on Vildor. And Christian's the one that was out there in week one.
For the Rams game.
The Rams game with all those, like Cooper Kupp still running. So
what a great, fun, uplifting pod this has been. I'm gonna wrap it up. I'm gonna give Nagy the benefit of the doubt. He owns the Lions, he's 6-1. Go get a victory, Bears. Prove me right. Keep that.
Hey,
keep that.
He was 5-0 against the Lions going into that game last year.
I know. And that's the other thing. I cannot in my heart of hearts believe or hope that the Bears will be the Lions' most recent wins twice. Because that is the Lions' last win. The last win was that game last year at Soldier Field when they gave up a 10-point lead in the last 2 minutes of the game. Mitch got strip sacked within his own red zone. And that's the Lions' most recent win. So God help the Bears if they now are the next win over a year later.
Woo. Man, I don't know what to expect. I will choose the Bears. Appreciate it, Hope. That's it for the Under Center podcast. We'll be back Friday to let you know what we feel about this Thanksgiving game. If the Bears win or lose, rate, follow, review, hit us with the 5-star. If you're betting, please use PointsBet.